Good evening, family. My name is Mike. I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Hi, Mike.
Really quick, I'm grateful to be here. My home group is A Vision for You in Union. We meet on Thursday in Union. We're the only meeting in Union on that night. Please come over and see us. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. I sponsor men and women, and I expect them to sponsor men and women if they're capable. My sobriety date is October 1st of 2008. And I'm here to share with you my experience with the Big Book. You know, I say this every week. The great thing, the great news about Alcoholics Anonymous is you can do whatever you want in here. But my truth, my experience is I suffered greatly until I had a spiritual experience. I had to find out what alcoholism was, which is what we spent the last 3 weeks doing. We'll actually do more review on that. I really love, after the three pertinent ideas, going into step three. There's a lot of hitting home again. My first step, and that's the left to my, you know, as a newcomer, when I'm reading this first time through, left to my current thinking and my current path, no matter what, I'm going to drink and I'm totally screwed. And then in step two, if I can set aside prejudice about what I think I know about God, and not trying to put God into a box, but just saying sort of, is it possible that there's a power greater than myself, I find some hope. And then I turn my will and my life over, which we'll get to. That's consummated in four. I do want to do one housekeeping thing real quick. My sponsor was here last week, you know, I really like, I love our literature. I carry all this literature with me. If anybody wants anything, please take something. But I had gotten into, in problems other than alcohol, there's a statement in here about what AA meetings should look like, and it actually was pertinent to what we were talking about, but I worded it wrong. So I decided to come tonight and tell you exactly what it says. But it says, sobriety, freedom from alcohol, through the teaching and practice of the 12 steps, is the sole purpose of an AA group. Mm. And, you know, again, last week I was talking a lot about my passion for AA and the message. You know, this message in step 12, that if I have a spiritual experience, spiritual awakening, I can recover. Yeah, took a lot of time with all that. I think there was one other thing, but it's probably not that important. So we're reading how it works, and we're in the middle of 58. I'll find out exactly where in just a second. And I do remember, actually, I was talking about how I feel like this book, I read this book verbatim. I read it literally, and I really believe that this book tells me everything I need to know about living my life. You know, as I go to practice the concepts and the traditions and have experiences with those, the it's like a roots of a tree, how it shoots out into everything in my life really starts to become more clear. And so I was reading how our stories disclose in a general way. Again, I went through this last week, that I don't need war stories, that I can tell in a general way, I can describe my first step, my physical, mental, and spiritual illness. I can describe powerlessness and unmanageability by telling you about my selfish, self-centered, dishonest, and fearful ways. But I don't need to get into detailed stories. And again, moving forward in that, I also, again, very wordy, it says, you know, in a general way, what we were like. And for me, that's not what it was like, because when I say it, as you guys have heard me talk about a lot in this book, I have to put me in here, because I like to apply stuff to all of you people and think that that's not me. And I often use the insanity that really is left with in the end of step one. I couldn't apply the word insanity to myself. I could define it for you. What happened being the 12 steps, the bridge to what we are like now, and that I can do that without telling a whole bunch of stories. So we'll move past that. We'll end with that. If you've decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. So again, am I convinced that you have something? Am I convinced that I have something, this problem? Am I convinced that maybe I have this problem that my sponsor had? And he didn't try and fit me into his first step. He didn't try to convince me of anything. He laid out his experience. And you know, one-on-one with my sponsor, that was where we found a place for the war stories. You know, the dig deep. The guy spent hours and hours and hours telling me his stories about his alcoholism. And you know, I could refer to 90 here. I probably should if my sponsor was here to go verbatim. But going to page 90 and working with others, I also like to talk about that instruction to use the word recovered. It actually says that, you know, when we're working with a newcomer, when we're introduced to a newcomer and they're willing to go to any length to get this thing, Page 90 says that I should be introduced as one who has recovered, and I've talked over and over about what that word means to me, and again, I don't want to do too much review. So, at some of these we balked, and we could spend hours just on this little setup that we read at most meetings, this how it works, or at many meetings. So at some of these we balked, and I didn't know what that word balked meant, which, even though I'm a baseball fan, but it sort of means like started but faked. I'll explain it more when I get into four. I balked on my four step, and it got me in horrible, horrible trouble. I was convinced I was starting and doing my four step, but I really wasn't doing anything. I never picked up the pen. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, and I had to be convinced that this was the easier, softer way, that I had to try everything else that I had to try. And that was just my deal. I'm like a scientist, and I had to try every experiment two or three times. I had to try every manipulation of doing this myself, doing this without God, doing this without a book or a sponsor. And that was just my experience. But we could not. Mike could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. I'm going to see these words, fearless and thorough, synonyms for them, come up later. One of my experiences with this book is that Bill seemed to have a pretty good grasp on the English language, and he liked to use interchangeable words a lot. And we talked about that when we read Appendix 2, different words for spiritual experience. Change. And this is going to come up in our four step. We're going to talk about thorough and honest. And for me, fearless and thorough, searching and honest. We're sort of talking about the same thing. So we're begging you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Again, my thinking is no avail to me. You know, we talked about middle of the road solution. Half measures. This is sort of saying the same thing to me, that if I'm holding on to my old ideas and I think I'm going to figure this out myself or take shortcuts, I'm going to probably get zero. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for us, but there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. And I want to share this really quickly now. You know, I went through a really militant phase in my first couple years of AA. And I actually ended up at some point having two things pointed out to me. One was that we don't have a monopoly on God. And you guys have heard me talk a lot about, you know, God and how I'll never tell you what my understanding or belief of God is. We're on page 59, moving into 59. I'm not here to tell you that because it's not really important to you. But you better find something now. Because again, if you're really an alcoholic, and I'm talking to you as if you're really an alcoholic, please, if you haven't had an experience with this book, this is not to replace that experience. Go get a sponsor. Somebody who's had an experience with this, understands their alcoholism, is armed with facts about themselves, and can explain to you their experience. I just totally sidetracked myself. But for me, I had to find... Oh, I remember. So alcohol was absolutely more powerful than me. That was really clear. And this is how basic I had to keep it in my second step. Alcohol was more powerful than me. And I realized it couldn't be the most powerful thing in the universe. So based on that bare bones idea that there could be something more powerful than alcohol that could relieve me of my alcoholism, I had a shot. And may you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. So again, it's saying, you know, and they keep saying half measures. For me, anything but full effort. You know, I'm going to fall short, I'm going to make mistakes, and that's okay. But in this phase of the process, we're getting ready to go into 3 and 4. Doing this halfway gets me zero. I just might as well not do it. And we'll talk about this more in 4, that, you know, really the thing that I'm trying to get to in my inventory is the thing that I don't want to get to. You know? So I can write 1,000 things down and leave one out, and it's for nothing, in my experience. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. So, you know, have I had this experience? And we're going to talk, you know, we're again doing a lot of review on 1 and 2. I'm desperate. I'm hopeless. I believe I'm totally screwed. I'm at a point where, you know, as we talked about, step one leaves me with go on the way I've been going or accept spiritual help. And like a good alcoholic, I sort of go, yeah, I don't know, you know, like, you know, brutal, slow death. Because it's, you know, let's be real, like, my alcoholism wasn't fast. Like, I believe I was dying. Mm-hmm. And I actually at some point conceded to and was ready. I was ready to go. Mm-hmm. And I was tired of waking up. But it was slow and painful, and it tortured everybody around me in the process. Mm-hmm. We ask his protection and care with complete abandon. We'll dig more of that into the third step. This third step is, in my experience, it's kind of a huge proposal. It's a huge thing to ask of an alcoholic, to completely abandon myself to a power greater than myself that I don't understand, and to dive into this process. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery, and I'm not going to go through and read each of these steps because we're going to have an experience with them. But what I do want to do is move to page 60. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order, I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. I'm going to fall short. You know, the book tells me over and over, it's okay to make mistakes. You know, I remember at 2 years and 4 years being in a dark place, up to no good, and thinking, like, I'm totally screwed. I can't tell my sponsor this. I should know better. How am I behaving this way again? Mm-hmm. But the book is clear over and over that, you know, as long as I stop it and I make right, I can come back from anything. So don't be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. And this is also illustrated. Every now and then, I'll have somebody open-minded. You know, like a close family member who, you know, knows that I'm a member of AA, who's curious about AA, and it takes hours and hours and hours to try and talk about spiritual principles to somebody of AA. And I always have to remember about an hour, hour and a half in to, like, remind them that, like, I'm not self-righteous. This is not how I behave all the time. This is the stuff I strive for. You know, like, because this, you know, if I just sit here and tell you the 12 steps and I'm doing it all perfectly all the time, it comes off as very self-righteous, and I fall short. The principles we have set down, the point is we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. And this is what I need to do. I need to grow. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures made before and after made clear three pertinent ideas. And again, I pose these as questions. I ask myself, whoever I'm working with, do I believe I'm an alcoholic and can I manage my life? Yeah, I absolutely believe at this point that I'm an alcoholic. They wrote a book about me. These men who are nothing like me appear to have this thing that I have. You know, I'm starting to hear feelings that I never told anybody I had. Fears. Do I believe that no human power could relieve my alcoholism? I've tried. We talked about this in Frothy Emotional Appeal, how the begging and crying of my mom, incentives, you know, whatever the reason or the goal or whatever I'm offered, I can't seem to stop. And then on the flip side of that, whatever I'm threatened with, I still can't seem to stop. So those are all human powers in my experience. Jail. You know, offers, those are all human power, and none of those things seem to be able to stop me. And do I believe that God could and would if he were sought? And my answer to that one is yes. So then it says, being convinced, for me it's those three, you know, pertinent ideas. Being convinced of those three pertinent ideas, I'm now at step three, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? And I love when it asks questions like this, because then there's always an answer following immediately. But again, and we'll talk about this in the third step, but this is a tall order, and it's getting kind of scary for me, honestly. I do believe I'm cornered and I have no other choice, but what does this look like, this turning my will and my life over to God? The first requirement, is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. And we've talked the last few weeks about how me managing my life and running my life doesn't seem to work out. Even when my intentions are good, I seem to just screw everything up. On that basis, what basis? Being convinced that any life run on self-will. On that basis, I am almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though my motives are good. So even trying to do good, and you know, I hear this a lot in the more workshops and stuff I go to about looking at the motives under the motives, because I can even convince myself that my motives are good. And often my motives are good, but when I really dig deep and I really start to come awake and I really start to share my truth with more people, I'm able to see that underneath is almost always something in it for me. You know, you can make an argument, it's kind of dumb, but you could, maybe it's not dumb, but, you know, like this giving with no strings attached, this hours and hours and hours that we spend with sponsees, there is something in it for me. I get to stay alive and at peace. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the show, the whole show. Is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. So he's an actor, not the producer or director. But this is me. You know, like I have problems staying in my lane, just playing my role. Like I've done everything in a restaurant. So let's just say, as a waiter, you know, when I was waiting tables, I could tell everybody how to run the restaurant better. I had a real problem just taking my tables and minding my own damn business. You know, it was a real problem. I made great money doing that. But I always had input on how everybody could do everything else better. And then people got bitter with me, and I wasn't liked, and I wonder why. I was just trying to help. And nobody asked me to help. Just do your job and do it well. It's forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. And again, that's me. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. Sorry, I was wondering what I had right there. Virtuous sort of for me means my intentions generally are good. Just clean, good, honest goods. And even when I think they are, they may not be. It's sort of what I was talking about a second ago. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. And this is where I'm starting to think, yeah, like that's so frustrating to me. Even when I am these things, it still doesn't go well. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he's likely to have varied traits. What usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit him. And you're usually asking, like, are you identifying with this? Like, how is your life working for you? How are your relationships? Are you trying to force and make and push things to happen? And even though your intentions are right, it just seems to piss everybody off and nothing goes the way it should. But then honestly, too, aren't sometimes I'm just pissed off and I'm better than you and running on ego, even though I may not always see it. But am I identifying with this? Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he is sure that other people are more to blame. It's always more other people, always, because I'm a great guy. I swear to God, I hold the door open for an old lady, and as she's passing, I see if her wallet's grabbable, you know? And like, but my mind forgets the watching her purse part. You know, like later on when I'm reading this, I tell my sponsor, well, I hold doors open for old, you know, I mean, that's just an example, you know, for anybody. I hold the door open for people, and I just totally forget that, yeah, but you're scheming, you know, like, he's sure that other people won't. He becomes angry, indignant, and self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? Are you relating to the stuff I just talked about? Even when I'm trying to be kind. You know, or I got to see that, like, look, I got to make sure everybody, one of my fears is not getting credit for what I do. That was one of my top fears. Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well? And I talked a little bit about this earlier, illusion versus delusion. Illusion, for me, is the stuff that I see externally if I go to a magic show or I see other people drinking normally, and I'm fooled. For me, but a delusion is something that comes inside my own head that I believe, that is not true. This is the scary part of my alcoholism, is my alcoholism lies to me in my own voice, and I believe it. It's really scary, because I generally do what the voice in my head tells me. And I don't have any diagnosis, I don't have any weird voices in my head, it's just my alcoholism. And I'm constantly just like, I think I have to force and make everything happen, you know? Is it not evident to all that the rest of the player, to all the rest of the players, that these are the things he wants? And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is he not, even in the best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? And if I'm really getting honest with myself about this stuff, again, specifically, even when I believe my motives are good, if I really take my time and I'm honest with myself and honest with my sponsor, I can start to see that it always was selfish. It was always about what can I get. Our actor is self-centered, egocentric, as people like to call it nowadays. And I generally like to differentiate selfish and self-centered here. Self-centered to me is sort of I'm in the middle and everything that you all do has something to do with me. You know, the guy in traffic cut me off. My buddy Pat, he gives a great description of this. Like, he's going to play golf. It's a, you know, a big, great day of golf planned at a great course. And then it rains. And his attitude is like, it's raining on me. And it's like, no, dude, it's raining on Jersey, you know? Like, but for me, it's raining on me, and I play for me, and you're all dealing with the same thing. And in fact, in my relationships, it's usually I caused the crap. He is like the retired businessman who lolls in the Florida sunshine in the winter, complaining of the sad state of the nation. The minister who sighs over the sins of the 20th century. Politicians and reformers who are sure all would be utopia if the rest of the world would only behave. The outlaw safecracker who thinks society has wronged him. And the alcoholic who has lost all and is locked up. Whatever our protestations, are not most of us concerned with ourselves, our resentments, or our self-pity? And you know, this whole like outlaw safecracker thing is where I sort of relate. You know, I spent a lot of years in jail. A lot. I'm really lucky I didn't get life. I never murdered or raped anybody, but I've done a lot of foul things. And when I got off parole, I was so convinced that California was out to get me. And I burned rubber out of there. And you know, like, meanwhile, actually what happened the last time I got pulled over, last time I got arrested, they ran my name and they're like, look at this dude's record. We got to be able to get him for something. He's got to be doing something wrong. And meanwhile, like, I blew a .24, you know, driving 75 in a 45 with my lights off. But I played victim of, like, them reading my record and assuming I'm doing something wrong. And I forget that, like, dude, that's your record minus all the stuff you got away with. You know? I mean, there's one misdemeanor, whatever, that I didn't do, but I copped to because I got less time, whatever. It doesn't matter. And then I play victim of copping to that because I was going to get lesser time. And when it comes back to bite me, all my decisions are horrible, but I think you're all out to get me. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. All I think about is me. It all revolves around me, and I'm always concerned with what I deserve, what I want, what I'm afraid of losing. And that's the root of my troubles. And hopefully I'm starting to see this. Because the freedom from alcoholism, is going to be the freedom from self. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. And I like to focus on the word driven there. Because today I sometimes experience these things, but they're not the driving force. I had no idea that the driving force in my life was my fear, my self-delusion, my self-seeking, and my pity. Every action I took, well, we'll just break it down into ego and fear. Every action I took was either ego or fear driven. And they're so intertangled with each other that I can't even see which is which most of the time. But everything I do is fear and ego, fear and ego, fear and ego. And I just run people over. And then I wonder why nobody likes me. Why nobody answers the door. Why when I walk up to my neighbor's house and I hear a party going on and they go, oh crap, it's Mike. And it goes quiet. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation. But we invariably find that at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. And this is my experience. You know, I said this before, and I don't want to. I felt like I made a bad left turn last time. I was never a victim of anything. I've never been victimized. I just never have. I've had some bad things happen to me. But I put myself in position for those things to happen. I've been robbed. I shouldn't have been in that neighborhood flashing money. You know? I shouldn't have been in that neighborhood at 4 a.m. I've been stabbed, I've been shot at. I shouldn't have been involved. I was involved in those things. I was active participants in negative behaviors that put me in positions to get hurt. You know, number one resentment on my list is the guy who I fronted some drugs to, and he disappeared. And he told my girlfriend all the stuff I had been up to. Well, first of all, I trusted somebody who I knew was grimy with money. I left all my stuff in his car, and I was actually doing what he said I was doing. You know, and this girlfriend of mine was his since preschool, was his friend. You know, I mean, how dare he? I had all these BS codes, you know, these guy codes and jailhouse codes, and they're all nonsense. They got me nowhere. I take left turns a lot. So our troubles, we think, they arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. But at this point, I'm starting to see it. I'm starting to see that everything is just what I want to do. Thought comes, I do. You know, no care or concern about what anybody else does. Sometimes I feel bad after, until the next time I do it. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. There's that word must again. Must. I've got to be rid of this. But again, rewinding back a page, I'm going to fall short of this. Okay? I'm going to fall short. I'm going to be selfish and self-centered sometimes. But I've got to start losing it. I've got to start shaking it. I've got to stop having it be the stuff that drives me, that's behind my every action. You know, again, fierce, ego. These are things that I experience, but I shouldn't be living in them. And God makes that possible. Higher power, whatever works for you. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by asking, by wishing, or trying on our own power. We have to have God's help. This is the how and why of it. First of all, Mike has to quit playing God. I don't play God, but you do. You argue everybody else's concept of God, and you think you're in charge of everything, and you're constantly trying to force, and you know, I have this belief that if I don't make it happen, it doesn't happen. So I need to stop. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. So back to that, I'm the actor, he's the director. Okay? I'm just going to play my part. God was he is the principal, we are his agents. And I look at this like a spy society or whatever. There's a principal and an agent. I'm an agent. I'm just a doer. I take orders and I carry them out. Really simple. I take orders from God. I carry them out. He is the father and we are his children. Again, same sort of idea. I am a father. I kind of get this. Like, you know, I'm going to do what this loving, guiding being who wants nothing but my good tells me to do. I'm going to be an obedient child to God. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed. And we talked about this arch. We've done the foundation. We've done the cornerstone. I don't want to beat this stuff over and over. And now this arch that I talked about, we're going to walk through 3 and 5, provided we continue to do 5 through 9. But I have an opportunity in 5 to recreate my life, to hit reset, to not carry anything with me that I legitimately let go of. When we sincerely took such a position, what position? He is the director, I'm the actor, he is the principal, I am the agent, he is the father, I'm the child. When I take that position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. Here's some promises. We had a new employer, so now I'm an employee, right? It fits right in with all these. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, what footing? We just reviewed that. He is the principal, et cetera, et cetera. Established on that footing, I become less and less interested in myself, my little plans and designs, and that's like one of my favorite lines in this book, our little plans and designs. I always had an angle. I had so many mental contracts with people, you know, so many mental contracts with people that they had no idea about. So many you owe me's. So many if I do something for you, you owe me back. You know, I had so many scores kept, so many. And this is telling me I'm going to become less interested in that stuff. I'm going to just start doing for others. more and more become interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. What? As we felt new power flow in, lack of power is my dilemma. We talked about this in 2. I have no power. What I need is power. So based on these ideas, which is what 4 through 9 is going to allow me to do, I'm going to start to get free of self. And new power will flow in. I'm going to start contributing. And I've also said this a few times. The end result of this whole process is usefulness to others. There's no real end result. But, you know, at the end, what this program ends up being all about is getting the hell out of the way so I can help other people. As we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully. Woo, face life successfully. As we become conscious of His presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter. We were reborn. Now, these are promises that come with conditions. There's a lot of ifs in this book. And I know people like to say that, yes, this program is suggestive. We suggest you do the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. We suggest, because that's what we offer in AA. Okay? Do whatever you got to do. Do I believe God can get someone sober without AA? Yeah. He's God. He's not confined to this book or this room. But in AA, what we do is AA. And once you decide to do AA, there's a lot of musts and have-tos. They're not suggestions anymore. Mm-hmm. And I've used this analogy. You've all heard it before. If I had a terminal illness. And if I went to a doctor and he prescribed me something and I decided to take that prescription, I have to take it a certain way. There's a certain way to take that medication. We were now at step 3. Many of us said to our Maker as we understood Him. And how I usually do this is I read this and I talk about what a tall order this is. That for me it was like sort of, I mean, this honestly felt like jumping out of an airplane and hoping whoever packed the chute packed it right. Like this literally felt that way for me. And then my mind goes, well, it's not that risky, but it is. Because I'm about to be willing to throw aside what I think I know. And what I think I know, I think has protected me. You know, I used to always say my thinking is what kept me alive in prison. It's also what got me there. You know? I mean, more importantly, it's what got me there. And so I'm about to cast that stuff out. I'm about to throw out hours and hours and hours and hours and hours I spent arguing anybody's concept of any kind of higher power. You know, I'm about to dive in, because I'm about to dive into this 100% full bore. I'm about to do whatever my sponsor tells me. He's just read this book to me that nobody has ever talked about this thing I have with me. You know, in the 2 years in AA, nobody ever explained to me this. And maybe they tried and I didn't hear it. I don't know. So this is a tall order. But it's also incredibly simple. And we are just asking you to take a little leap. So we ask our Maker as we understood Him. I don't understand Him at all. Perfect. That's actually perfect. I mean, we talked about this last week too, about step 2 is not putting a God in a box and defining what God is. This is about setting aside what I think I know God is or could be and saying, is it possible that there's a power that could relieve me of my alcoholism? God, I offer myself to Thee. And we like I said, I read this, I break it down. And then I read it together with them. We get on our knees and we read it together. And I let them know that, you know, after we read this together, you know, leave your book open there, read it over and over and over, and really take your time on each of these words. And really, like, ask yourself what they mean to you. Are you really willing to do this? And I'm going to do my own, and when I'm done, I'm going to get up and move on. I may take way longer than you. I do 20 minutes meditation every morning. I may be here for 10 or 15. That goes quickly for me. I may be here 2 or 3. Just do you, you know, and we'll meet upstairs. And hopefully they have an experience with this. So I read it to him, God, I offer myself to Thee. And again, that's a tall order. Going from I don't want any part of any kind of God to being willing to say, God, I offer myself to Thee, honestly and humbly. To build with me and to do with me as Thou wilt. Also scary. I'm not only offering myself, but I'm now offering for God to build something with me, to change, to do something in me that I have no idea what it is. I have no idea what this experience is. I had no idea the freedom that was coming. Anybody who's had an experience, who's recovered, you understand what I'm talking about. You know, I have a friend also. He says if you wrote what you wanted your life to look like in 10 years, if you wrote that in day one, you'd probably sell yourself short 1,000 times. Mm. We talk about this fourth dimension of existence. It's beyond anything I can comprehend. Freedom. I am free from the desire to drink. I understand every one of those words, but I could not comprehend what that really was. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. And I look back at the bondage of self and I kind of squirm a little bit at that. Because again, you're asking me to let go of something. But the truth is I've been stuck in a prison that only I keep me locked in, but I can't let me out of. You know, and it's my thinking. All this selfish, self-centered, dishonest, and fearful stuff that we've talked about. Take away my difficulties, self. Self is all my difficulties. That victory over them may bear witness to those I would help. The end result. Of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life, may I do thy will always. Another tall order, because my mind starts going to how I'm going to fall short of this. And I'm going to. But the book has already told me that's okay. You're going to fall short. Strive for this. Do not settle for less. Do not shoot for less. Okay, that's my point. But know that you're going to fall short. You know, we found it very desirable to take this spiritual step with an understanding person, such as our wife, best friend, or spiritual advisor. But it is better to meet God alone than with one who might misunderstand. The wording was, of course, quite optional so long as we expressed the idea, voicing it without reservation. So I hear a lot of people rewrite this, and that's fine. For me, let's just do this. You know, let's just do it the way it's written. It's, you know, you have a problem with thou, get over it. Like, really get over it. You're an alcoholic, get over thou. Okay? I mean, but that was my experience. I felt like, oh, here we go with the church stuff again. And again, I'm not for or against the church. I'll never tell you. But I, like, again, this is my thinking. I'm right back to what I think I know. Like, I'm going to let thou or thy keep me drunk. I don't want to say it that way. And that's fine. I know a lot of people who are told to rewrite this. Whatever your experience is, whatever your sponsor's experience is right. Are they at peace? Like that's the deal. Like, every single person here has had an experience with the book. We could sit here and have a consortium and talk about our experiences, and we'll be here for months because we all have very different experiences with exactly the same words. And God. Like, and God in there. Because God has an individual relationship with each of us. But again, voicing it without reservation. And this is the tough thing, because do I really believe my first step? Only I can answer that for myself. And there were times where I didn't understand the first step because I never had anybody write it to me, but there were times where I really was willing to buy in the fact that I'm an alcoholic, but as soon as you told me to do something, I said, nah, I'm not into that. You know? So it really is this, are you all the way in or not? Mm-hmm. Not mostly all the way in, not I am so incredibly all in except for a shave. A shave less. That for me is not enough. I need to be all the way in. And the book says earlier on, too, you don't have to like this. You don't have to want to do the self-searching. Nobody really cares. You know, like you either want freedom or you don't. This is how we found it. Or go find another way. And that's great, too, if you find another way. I couldn't find one. This was only a beginning. Though, if honestly and humbly made, an effect, sometimes a very great one, was felt at once. And I want to talk about my white light experience that I had here. I thought I had a white light third step experience, and then I balked for 4 months on my fourth step. And we'll talk when we get into four about what kind of trouble I got into. But what I do realize happened was I had a white light second step experience. I got on my knees and I spent time with my sponsors at the Queens Intergroup office. And I just cried for like 15 minutes. Like, I just cried and cried and cried. I had fought this word God so hard, but I secretly at some point had started asking people, you know, like whoever, rabbis, priests, whatever, whoever, like, how do you get God in your life? And they always said, you just ask. Mm-hmm. And I'm a cynic, you know, I'm cynical. So I'm like, okay, God, come in. You know, nothing happened. And this was like the certification. This was like the slip that I needed, this prayer. This was like I finally felt like God entered in. And I lay there and I cried and I cried and I cried for like 15 minutes. I felt a power greater than myself. And then I balked and I suffered immensely. But for the first time, I actually believed, you know, and I've told you guys about the different experiences I've had with this book. But the first time through this book, this was like 3 or 4 months into the program that I'm at this page. You know, my sponsor, we sat and we read 1 hour once a week. And these 62 pages, that's a long time. Again, talking the way I talk about every single word. And I never really believed that this was going to work for me. Mm-hmm. I was willing to try it because I had nothing left. But this is the first time where I really said, you know what? Like, I was willing to not say no. It won't work absolutely. I just never really believed it would. This was the first time where I really started to believe, you know what? This might actually work for me. But then I take my will back and I think I can, now I got it and God's in. And so now I can take my time and do it my way again. You know, it's right. It's like we get our 90-day chip in here without doing anything. Mm. And we're good, feeling good. You know, mom thinks I'm good. I'm lashing out at everybody and yelling, at least I'm not drinking. But so then it says, next we launched. Sorry. On a course of vigorous action. I've been trying to get at least a smile out of Dave for a while. The first step. So this is something that's actually brought to my attention. It's kind of cool, you know, whatever, like however necessary it is for you. But it does say, like, we're just starting. Like, we really haven't done anything. We really haven't done anything except come to understand a problem. You know, I've had the experience. Come to understand that experience. Said maybe it's possible that God could, a power greater than myself, could relieve my alcoholism. And then, based on that, made a decision to go through, to start the steps. And it says, next we launched. Not slowly strolled. Not took a nap and then, you know, meandered. It says, next we launched on a course of vigorous action. The first step of which is a personal house cleaning. So really the first step of this process, and again it's semantics and I like to say things differently to sound cool, but yeah, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step. Those are powerful words, and I always like to stop when I hear vital. That's a word I just moved past so quickly. But I was told that vital means necessary for life, i.e. water and sun for a plant, you know, food and oxygen for me. Vital and crucial step. And again, going back to honestly and without reservation. It could have little permanent effect. Whoa, it could have permanent effect. Like the flip side of that. Unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. And I just moved through a whole bunch of really cool stuff there. So, again, this vital and crucial step, done humbly and without reservation, could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort. We'll pause there. That's telling me on the flip side of this, this could have a permanent effect. But followed by a strenuous, okay, effort. Strenuous effort means me working hard. You know, I'm going to break a little sweat, figuratively. To face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. Well, what's that? We just talked about it. We've been talking about that self. Self, 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 self. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. And again, you know, I said this a couple times. It never occurred to me that I needed to get okay that I could stop drinking. I always thought I had to stop drinking so I could get okay. But what happens to me is by day 9, without alcohol, because I never had 10 days. I don't know how people do it in here for months or years. I don't know. But by day 9, I'm in an elevator, and I feel like Incredible Hulk, and I just want to, like, just Hulk up and explode the elevator and everybody on it. and their stupid little conversation. You know, I'm everything irks me. That's what 9 days without alcohol looks like to me. And I'm whipping at people, and I'm snapping at people, and I'm lashing out. Alcohol was not my problem. My problem is what's going on in my brain right before I pick up alcohol that it starts to look like a good idea again. That's the insanity of alcoholism. And I talked a lot about this in the first step. All the stuff I do with alcohol in my system is not the insanity of my alcoholism. All the stuff I do with the amount of alcohol I put into my system is just science. It's what the human body does. When it needs alcohol, when it has the mass amount that I have in it with no food and no sleep. Phenomenon of craving aside, the stuff I do with a gallon of vodka and me having not slept or ate is science. The insanity of alcoholism is picking up alcohol after not having it for a while. Given what's happened every single time, buying into this lie that my brain tells me, a half a pint, and then as soon as I sip it, it's my last hurrah. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions, and I can't believe I'm still not on step four, so we're going to start moving quickly after this. But I feel like that's probably a good place to stop for tonight.